Philadelphia has tried all these things to stop shootings. Broken windows policing, and programs with names like Focus Deterrence and Group Violence Intervention. But there's still been a major spike in gun violence this year, with almost 1,500 people shot. Nothing seems to be working. What are we missing?
The same way guns tick lives is the same way guns protect lives.
I'm Malcolm Burnley, in for Shaiben Yaakov. This is The Why. Let's talk about the real reasons why young people keep turning to guns. John Solomon has been shot and served prison time for shooting someone else. He now runs a nonprofit dedicated to stopping gun violence. John is 28 years old. He grew up in North Philadelphia at the intersection of 24th and Somerset, which is nicknamed 2-4 Bloodline. Can you tell me about the scar on your arm?
When I was around the age of 15 or so, I remember that day being kind of quiet. It wasn't too much traffic around the area as far as cars. I was going to war with a neighborhood that wasn't too far from where I lived at. And what I mean by war, I mean like it was a violent war. I mean, people were getting shot and killed. In the same year, I actually had lost two friends to gun violence. I actually seen a person, but I didn't actually think that the person was trying to make an attempt on my life. So as the person got closer, you know, they began to open fire, and I was shot in my arm. Went inside of my chest, not too far from my heart, but you know, it just missed my heart, so I was able to live.
Yeah, you were 15 at that time, which I feel like is a whole lifetime, you know, based on some of your life experiences. But tell me a little bit about before that. What was your life like as a kid?
I grew up without a father. My mother was in my life. She raised me. She was a very loving, caring mother. Also, I had a grandmother. I grew up in a really good household. The challenge is, this is what I speak about very often, is that no matter how good your household is, when you step outside into an environment like that, everybody is under the same conditions. I wanted to be a doctor growing up. I had dreams, I had aspirations growing up. But a few different life-changing moments happened around the age of 11 and 12 that I feel like were the events that really altered my perspective on life. And I witnessed one guy from my grandmother's block, which is a block that I grew up on. I heard gunshots, and I actually walked up to him, and I seen that he was dead. Somebody had killed him. Not too long after that happened, when I was actually coming home from school on my way to my grandmother's block, and there was a friend of mine who was, he was in panic. He was running from something. This is around 3 o'clock in the afternoon where school was letting out. And I see my homie, you know, my friend, he's like in a panic, like he's running from someone. And I asked him, you know, what happened? And he told me that my cousin, whose name was Boone, was shot in front of Dobbins High School, which was a block away from the school that I went to. I was in middle school at the time. And I remember walking up to him and, you know, seeing him, you know, lifeless as well. It made me want to, for the first time in my life, I actually wanted to get revenge for that. You think, I'm just a kid. What does a kid want to take revenge for his cousin getting killed in front of the whole high school? But this is what you see growing up. And it traumatized me in a lot of ways. And I didn't actually know what was going on within me. At the time, of course, you're young. You don't really understand what trauma is. You don't understand a lot of things about life.
When did you get your first gun, or when did you buy your first gun?
Around 11 or 12, I was carrying guns occasionally, but I didn't officially have my own personal firearm until about 13 years old. At that age, my life was pretty much threatened. There was word going around in the community that someone was trying to cause harm to me. I don't really want to talk in too much details, but somebody was hurt, physically hurt, and I had something to do with it. For that reason, they wanted to retaliate and cause harm to me. I think with any, no matter where you grow up at, you kind of, as a kid, you think that, you know, a gun is masculine, is what men carry. You know, I did have a thing for firearms growing up, and I did see people carry firearms very often. So I just think growing up in a culture where carrying weapons is very common, it made it easier for me to feel comfortable or to be motivated to carry a firearm myself.
Were there people trying to give you the message of don't be a shooter, don't get involved in things like that? And if there were, what was your reaction to them at the time?
There were people, a few people, not a lot of people, that tried to steer me back on the right direction in life. But nobody that came to me was actually deeply involved in my life to the point where I would be more receptive to what they had to say to me. Nobody pulled me out of my environment to show me different things or to expose me to different things, because sometimes that's what it takes for you to open up your world and see that, you know, there's other things that you could be doing in life. So although I had people that talked to me, it didn't really get through. At the age of 18, I was pretty much well known in my community for being very violent. I was one of the go-to guys that you would call when you have like issues like that. And I was called and I came, and you know, the individual was out there, and I opened fire, and you know, he was shot. And I was I was arrested on the scene. I spent 5 years in prison as a result.
Did you hit the person you were shooting at? Or
He was hit. Mm-hmm.
And did he wind up living? Do you know?
Thank God he wound up living, yes. Because if he didn't wind up living, then I would have spent a lot more time in prison than what I did.
But what caused you to shoot in the end? Was it out of loyalty? I mean, was it out of a feeling of just, this is who I am now? Do you remember kind of what ultimately got you to pull the trigger?
Sometimes when you don't address situations violently, it can kind of backfire on you. When you're dealing with certain individuals that are violent as well, because the individual was, he had a violent history. So when I was called, you know, that was my first response to try to resolve the issue violently.
Right. It sounds like it was a situation where it's going to end up one way or it's going to end up the other way, and somehow a gun is going to be involved.
Yeah.
So was prison what you expected it to be?
Yeah. So when I got up state prison, I was around individuals that had life sentences or 20 to 40 or 30 to 60. But a lot of them guys in there helped me a lot in my development to the person that I am today. Some of these individuals that were in prison were locked up at a young age, and they grew up in prison. You know, they turned their life around in prison, but they don't have the opportunity to go home. So when they seen an individual like myself in there, and I was on this path of wanting better for myself, they kind of became mentors for me. They taught me the importance of educating myself and reading books and watching who I hang out with, and just a lot of different things that played a major role in me becoming a better leader and a better man for my household, my family, and my community.
It sounds like, you know, in prison, you got some of what you were missing as a younger man or as a teenager in terms of role models.
Yeah. It's strange that I would find my role models in prison, but that's what I found.
When we come back,
it's not a 1-2 step when it comes to stopping gun violence or telling the individual to put the gun down, because the same individual that you're telling to put the gun down may get killed because he doesn't have a gun on him.
supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Malcolm Burnley. I'm talking with John Solomon, who went to prison for shooting someone after he himself was shot at the age of 15. He's now an anti-violence advocate in the city. Following prison, you wound up starting an organization called Endangered Kind. Can you tell me about that?
Specifically, when it comes to young black males in inner cities, I felt like we were an endangered kind. And that's where I got the concept from. And I went on to actually develop a whole plan behind it. And I started a nonprofit organization. And Endangered Kind is a mobile advocacy group aimed at shifting the narrative on gun violence, which is what I'm doing now. So, you know, my job is to really share the perspective from being a shooter and the challenges that went into putting a gun down and actually doing the right thing. Because the truth is, once you get involved in gun violence and you have people that's trying to take your life and vice versa, it's not as simple as society makes it when they tell you that you should stop. I could have easily came home and wanted better for myself and could have got killed because of things that I've done in the past. So it's not a 1-2 step when it comes to stopping gun violence or telling the individual to put the gun down, because the same individual that you're telling to put the gun down may get killed because he doesn't have a gun on him.
What are the kinds of things you do for people through Endangered Kind so that it isn't as simple as saying putting the gun down?
I'm young enough to the point where young people actually will listen to what I'm saying. It's not that they're going to change right away, because it's a process. But anytime you're developing or growing, it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It didn't happen overnight for me. It took me to spend almost 5 years in prison for me to wake up. So a lot of things that I do, it consists of me just creating opportunities for them, building friendships with them, and sharing my advice and giving it time for them to grow. And once they reach a certain level of growth, they reach a place where they're willing to move forward. I'm from 24th and Somerset, but I don't live down there anymore. So I'm in a neighborhood where it's a much more nonviolent environment, but I make it my business to go down to my neighborhood and go to the neighborhoods where gun violence is very prevalent at. And sometimes I'm in the community physically with them, and there's risks that come with that. Standing outside with individuals that's going to war with people, where they at any given time, I can be talking to one of the individuals and a rivalry could come up and begin shooting and I could get shot. So there's a lot of different things that goes into addressing this issue.
I mean, everyone's been hearing about that in the city, that shootings are back up. What do you think is the cause of that?
It's really hard to answer that question because there are so many different elements, whether it's your environment, whether it's peer influence, whether it's poverty, access to more firearms and having more money to buy firearms. There's too many different reasons why the homicide rate is this high. Like, there's just too many different things for me to pick out one thing.
Is there anything you think the city could be doing to make guns less accessible, particularly for young people?
One person can't change what's going on in inner cities. But I do think that at least seeking to understand what's going on and talking to somebody like myself, or talking to individuals that's currently involved in that gun violence culture and having a deep understanding of what's going on, is necessary for you to be really effective at what you do. But everybody has a role. Like I said, everybody has a role in this.
What do you think the right role is for police? And I mean, should police be playing a role in anti-gun violence strategies in neighborhoods like you grew up in?
I think they should play some role. I'm not an individual that thinks that police, just because you're a police, you don't have no role in this. I mean, the main role that they can play is actually feeding information to individuals like myself and other leaders. And until that happens, until everybody's involved and not just organization, not just elected official, not just journalists, you know, everybody has to find their role in it to really minimize homicides in our city.
You've probably seen on the news that President Trump and others have been talking about the violence and lawlessness that's been spreading through American cities, and they've been hammering this before the election. And given your life experience and given what we've been talking about, I'm wondering what your reaction has been to hearing that message about violence and lawlessness in American cities.
This country was built off of lawlessness, and systematic oppression plays a major role in our environment reaching this place or individuals behaving this way. So when I hear individuals, especially people like Trump or just other politicians who don't know what's going on in this community, they never was raised in communities like this. It's ignorant and it's hypocritical.
What is the message that you would give to a teenager who's growing up in a similar situation, say, to the one that you grew up in?
My message is always to value your life. To value your life enough to sit down and reflect on the choices that you're making. Because the choices that you're making can potentially cost you your life, be it you being killed or sentenced to life in prison for an incident or a situation that could have been avoided or resolved in a peaceful way without you actually having to lose your life or freedom.
Thanks, John, for sharing your story.
I thank y'all for even listening to me and giving me the opportunity to speak. And I hope I said something that you can take with you and kind of, you know, reflect on moving forward.
John Solomon is an anti-gun violence advocate and founder of the nonprofit Endangered Kind. The Why is produced by me, Malcolm Burnley, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, Kelsey Hansen, Sabrina Boyd Circa, and Buffy Gorilla. We get editorial direction from Katie Culinary. You can find me on Twitter @Malcolm Burnley. Thanks for listening. We'll be back Monday.